You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident fanalist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, pack_data. So today is going to be PFF Day, meaning we're going to look at what the folks over at Pro Football Focus can tell us as far as their grades after watching all of the players, as well as some of the advanced stats as we see applicable. A little bit upset that I didn't get the podcast out to you a little bit earlier. One of the things I mentioned a couple weeks ago was something we should do is keep an eye on snap counts, because that's fairly indicative of where the team's at with certain players. Just saw on Twitter that Darren Hall, the running back, was just cut, and just looking at it very quickly, he had one attempt on the night. So running backs Dexter Williams had 11, Trey Carson had 9, Keith Ford had 6, Darren Hall just one carry, and 0 yards. 3 yards after contact, though, so I tend to think that was not a horrible run. Don't know. Either way, again, probably should have seen that coming, but we'll keep an eye on that also as I go through some of these grades. Again, the goal is going to be just show some of the highlights and lowlights, because it's preseason and it doesn't super matter, and I'll talk about that very briefly. Yes, again. Hey, when y'all stop freaking out about this, I'll stop talking about it. It'll be quick, though, I swear. This time I mean it, too. It's the first time I'm ever going to say it and mean it. It'll be very quick. And that'll be it for the day. It's already kind of late, and it's 4 o'clock. I want to be able to get upstairs and watch the Bears, because I don't know. What else am I going to do? Hopefully Trubisky plays. I just want to watch him throw a bit. It's kind of like watching the Packers game and saying, I just kind of want to watch something cool happen, like Rashawn get a sack or Savage get a pick or something cool, because it doesn't really matter. I just want to see something cool happen. So it's kind of like that with the Bears game. Like, just let me see Trubisky throw a pick and I'll turn the game off. Anywho, before we take our break, as per usual, I want to remind you all about Draft and their NFL season-long tournament. For all the fantasy football folks out there, I know you've already got a bunch going on, but that's fine because this is a best ball tournament. What does that mean? Oh, let me elaborate for you. It means you jump in on a draft because they're happening every couple minutes, so you can jump in right now if you want to. You gather up all your notes, you draft the perfect team, and then even if you're out doing something super important or really dumb, but you just forget to set your lineup, it doesn't matter, because they're going to set your lineup for you and give you credit for the players that got the most amount of points. I'm sure there's a separate strategy for all this. Go ahead and figure out what that is. You're a genius. I'm sure you got this locked down, and go draft your team. The difference between this and the draft you're doing with your homeboys is that this bad boy is paying out $3.5 million in cash prizes. And if the draft that you're doing with your friends is a $3.5 million cash out, we should probably hang out. Because I feel like we have a lot in common. Not the money part so much, but just a lot of other stuff. Like, our personalities would mesh. We should take vacations, you know? Just like me and you, just hanging out, man. You know, like maybe we go out to Mexico. Just saying. But if you're not in one of those, you should definitely give Draft a shot. And remember, for a limited time only, you can get a free entry into the Best Ball Championship when you make your first deposit. But you got to use promo code Packernet. That's a free shot at $1 million for using promo code Packernet when you make your first deposit on Draft. Just search Draft in the App Store or go to draft.com and come play free with promo code Packernet.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing. But they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for 5. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/built for us.
So I saw on Twitter, Daniel Jeremiah had tweeted out, he said, I asked the GM today about preseason defense. He said it was Pro Bowl game caliber simplicity. I know we all already know kind of this stuff, but it just occurred to me, maybe on like a new level, how ridiculous we are that we take this stuff serious. Basically, the preseason is like it's really not very much different than what happened with the Texans. It's a scrimmage practice. That's what it is. I mean, and again, I've laid this out several times. I posted a video in the Facebook group. If you're not in the Facebook group, get in the Facebook group, please, and thank you very much. But the video is from what's-his-name, who does all those great videos. But he was basically breaking down the three young new quarterbacks, the ones that people care about anyways, and how, you know, Daniel Jones is being praised and Haskins is kind of all over the place and yada, yada, yada. And really just kind of broke it down as far as why it's ridiculous. Because, you know, obviously this player does really well with simplistic throws, but the more they get complicated, the more he's terrible and all this kind of stuff. And you can see how, for example, this player is being asked to do very simple things and he looks really good. And this player is being asked to do really difficult things. And it got me thinking about Tim Boyle, how I said, well, he didn't look very good on the deep passes. So why do they keep doing it? Not because they wanted to convert it. So the problem with me watching this saying, man, this looks like last year's Packer game where it's like 3rd and 4 and we're taking a shot down the field. This is upsetting. Why? The goal is not to convert the third. I mean, of course, when you call a play, the goal for that the players on the field at that time is to try to complete the pass. That's not really the point I'm trying to make. They're not going to call that play, and Tim Boyle might not be trying to throw to that receiver. Tim Boyle was asked to throw a lot of deep passes because it's what he struggles with. This is just practice. We're basically watching a bunch of guys practice together, and we're freaking out, acting as though a loss in this is some kind of a detrimental thing. And even though I'm on the side of we don't need to panic, there's still some level of, like, I want to see really good stuff, and I'm upset that we don't see good stuff and all that. It just, on a new level, made me feel foolish. It's practice, man. And I think it's getting even more and more that way as we move toward, we're just not doing starters anymore. And I do think it's going to continue that trend. Aaron Rodgers is not going to play in the preseason, I would assume. If he plays any in preseason week 4, that would be stunning. And the point is, nobody cares. And every year when somebody plays and gets hurt, it just enforces more and more how this is a bad thing. And then every year, even when you do play, so, you know, you get like, what has Rodgers been doing? Like, toward the end, it was maybe he wouldn't play in the first preseason game, and then he would get like a series. Or maybe the first 2 games he would get like 1 drive and that's it. Then preseason week 3, he would, what did he get, a half? Probably a quarter? And the point of what I'm saying is, you still get September and it's sloppy and garbage. So after you sacrifice all these guys and they get hurt, it doesn't matter. And granted, maybe it instead of the 3rd week, it's the 4th week, right? If you don't get that extra week, I don't know. But the point is, the trend is going in a certain direction, and I don't see it slowing up at all. I mean, some of these injuries get to the point of being so devastating that seasons are ended. You know, like losing guys like Jordy or you know, AJ Green getting hurt or whatever. It's just, I think if it isn't basically just a practice, it's definitely moving in that direction. These are scrimmage practices for backups. And the thing is, if we would just think of it that way, and if the teams would just start marketing it that way, it would be less disappointing when the starters don't play. Because everything kind of builds anyways, right? You got your OTAs, and it's like, well, it's something, but it's not super fun. Then you get training camp without pads, and it's like, hey, man, it's rolling, here we go. Then they put pads on, it's like, oh, man, here now it's kind of, they're hitting people and things are happening. It wouldn't be that bad if it was like the next step is preseason, which is, again, it's backup scrimmage practice. Like, oh, cool, we get to watch some of these backups and maybe some draft picks or whatever, maybe not the first round guy because they're super valuable. But just say it that way. Because I'm still of the mind, and maybe if you're newer to football, it's not that big of a deal, but, you know, I'm still of the mind back in the day when starters played in the preseason. You know, they would play like a half. And then I would usually just turn it off after the half because I didn't know who the backup guys were. I wasn't as into things as I am now. You know, as a kid, it's like you want to watch it and then it gets boring. But I whether that's the direction we're going to go and we're just going to accept that that's what it is or not, that is what it is. Even if whether the starters play or not, that is what it is. These guys are just going out and like, hey, I want to see these players and I want to try these things, right? These are the couple things we need to work on. These are the couple things I want to try, you know, try out this play, see if they're kind of ready for it in live game action. But it doesn't correspond to the regular season. It just doesn't. This isn't the sequence we're going to be running. This isn't the tempo we're going to be running. This isn't the philosophy we're going to be running. These aren't even necessarily the plays we're going to be running. these aren't the players we're going to be playing with, and then these particular players aren't going to be running these specific routes. They're not going to be doing these specific things. Everything is going to be different because we're practicing. We need to practice this, so this is what we're going to work on today. It's not like, oh man, we're down by 17, we got to ramp it. No, who cares? This is what we're coming out to practice right now. So again, I know we all know this, but it just kind of hit me on a different level to hear a GM say basically it's the Pro Bowl. That's pretty much what it is, except it has significance because it's actually trying to get guys ready for the regular season, trying to evaluate talent and all that kind of stuff, whereas the Pro Bowl is just the worst thing that any sports, the worst thing in sports ever, with the exception of NASCAR. And even that is close. At least in NASCAR, you get a couple, maybe you get a wreck or something. Pro Bowl is just one giant wreck that isn't entertaining to watch. Anyways, we're way off topic. Let's take a look at some of the grades. And if you're wondering why we're going to bother looking at grades if I said it doesn't matter, remember, once you call a play, you still have to execute. So the grades maybe won't necessarily correspond to the regular season, meaning maybe you're really good in the preseason, but you won't be later, or vice versa. Maybe you didn't look very good, but you're going to look better later because you're going to be asked to do things that are, you know, your strengths. But still, at the end of the day, especially for some of the bubble guys, it's good to know, because if you're not playing well, it doesn't matter if it doesn't necessarily correspond. You're playing like garbage in front of your coaches. You're on the roster bubble. You're probably just going to get cut. I mentioned that Darren Hall got cut. An interesting note from Rob Domofsky here, and I don't know how seriously we should take this, but let me just read it, and I'll give you my interpretation, and you can kind of develop your own opinions. But according to Rob Domofsky, this was about a little less than an hour ago. He says, the Packers released Darren Hall, who had been claimed off of waivers from the Bengals on July 27th. GM Brian Gutekunst has been working the phones looking for another back in the trade market, according to league sources. So trying not to overreact to this, I do have a few thoughts. And starting from the most benign interpretation of this, it wouldn't surprise anybody if he picked up another running back, right? He's obsessed with picking up running backs. We know, you know, the guys that he likes, the guys he doesn't like, the prototype and all that kind of stuff. And it doesn't usually materialize into anything, right? We pick somebody up and it is what it is. And obviously a phone is involved in that anyways, right? He's working the phones trying to get running backs. The one word here that is interesting is the trade market. You don't have to trade for a free agent, correct? So this has me thinking two things. The first thing that it implies, and it makes a lot of sense, right? Since last year, Brian Gutekunst has been picking up running back after running back after running back after running back after running back, to the point where I'm making weekly jokes about it. He's constantly picking up running backs. I really think there's concern. And I said this about tight ends not too long ago, where he kept picking up tight ends. Hey, here's another tight end, another one. It's hard to say that several times, so I just started slurring like a sailor who's had a good night. But I really do think that this has something to do with it, right? If it's just depth, if we're just talking about, well, there's injury concerns with Aaron Jones, fine, pick somebody up. It becomes a problem when you're legitimately concerned about the injury concerns and you don't think that there's quality depth. In other words, there is a significant drop-off. It's not just a matter of Aaron Jones is fine, but if he gets hurt, we got Jamal, and if he gets hurt, we got Trey Carson and Dexter Williams. This, to me, says Dexter and Trey Carson are not ready. These guys are not ready to contribute. Not going to happen. Not year one. Maybe year two, Dexter gets this figured out, but this isn't working. There may also be concerns that maybe Jamal isn't right for this system, right? That's been a concern since day one. He's been basically hurt pretty much through this whole process. We haven't been able to see much. We haven't heard anything, good or bad. But you think about how dire the situation is if essentially you have one capable running back. And I'm not saying they have a problem with Aaron Jones' talent, but if you're in a situation where he's basically the only guy in the system that's any good that you can actually rely on, suddenly it becomes a more serious problem. And also the trade thing becomes a situation to where it becomes more urgent. And perhaps the timing is somewhat of an urgent thing, right? We keep picking guys up like, is he going to be the one? No. Is he going to be the one? No. So you keep taking swings hoping that you're not going to have to do what he's doing right now. And again, I don't know what's actually going on. Maybe this is being blown out of proportion. Maybe it's just completely inaccurate. I don't know. but I'm just going from the information that I have. And the fact of the matter is, all this tells me that they've been trying very, very, very hard to fix some kind of a problem at running back. They don't feel that they've fixed it. They don't feel that the solution is on the roster. And that includes just about everybody. However, we also have to factor in injuries, whether that means somebody is currently injured and it's problematic, or they're just concerned that if there's an injury, we are in a lot of trouble. The question is, how seriously are we taking this? I mean, is this more or less like we're just trying to offload Josh Jones? I mean, and that could be the other part of this as well. Maybe this is a situation in which we're trying to trade Josh Jones, and the top of the urgency list is running back. In other words, we can get by, I'd rather not, but we're going to try to trade Josh Jones, and running back is our priority, so let's see if we can go out and find a running back for Josh Jones or whatever, right? There's a lot of different angles you can go with this, but the bottom line is, if there's some truth to this story, the fact of the matter is Brian Gutekunst, Matt LaFleur, the Green Bay Packers are not satisfied or not happy with what we've seen at running back, and I think that's fair. Again, Aaron Jones, I think, is going to be fine. I think he's going to be fantastic. Dexter and Trey Carson have not looked good at all. In fact, they've looked horrible. So just scratch that. That's not going to work. And I don't know what we get from Jamal. And I think if we were okay with Jamal, I don't think that this is super necessary. You've got the two guys, and then you got Trey if things really fall apart, or Dexter or whatever. And plus Dexter, if it's just a time thing, like if this just takes some time, then, you know, as the number three, if things got real bad, maybe by week 3, 4, 5, 8, 9, 10, when the injuries stack up and he needs to start stepping up, he'll be ready. This, to me, implies, again, there's already a problem. I don't think we have that kind of time. And again, there's a lot of ways we can go with this. You know, number one would be Dexter's already about out the door. Things are that bad. I doubt it. But, you know, that's real bad. Maybe Jamal's about to go out the door. Maybe there's some significant injury issues with Aaron Jones right now. Maybe there's just concern with the amount of injuries with Aaron Jones and they don't believe he's going to make it. Maybe it's a matter of we don't want to give him a full load because he can't handle it, so we got to find somebody to split carries with, and we don't have anyone to split carries with. Right? Again, lots of different scenarios, but what I can't do is think of a scenario in which you start making phone calls to teams about making a trade about running back. Not just any kind of trade, right? You're always trying to upgrade your roster. I'm sure, you know, again, always making phone calls, always willing to listen. Hey, who's on the market? Do we need them? What do you want for them? To try to find the right value. If you can get the right value for, I mean, a quarterback, you're going to do it. To specifically make phone calls out to teams saying, we want a running back. What do you need for this guy? What do you need for that guy? It becomes a different situation. It's not just a matter of upgrading the team. It's a matter of we're hunting for something specific because we need something and we're running out of time. So, I mean, things are about to get interesting because as things get closer, I've been seeing all over Twitter, you know, the trade winds are picking up. There's a lot of big names out there. There's a lot of stuff. I feel like there's about to be an eruption, right? Trent Williams from the Redskins, it sounds like they're going to keep him, but you never know. There's a lot of people hot on his trail. Jadeveon Clowney, you know, there are big running backs out there that are available. I don't think the Packers are going to take that big of a swing to go get a Melvin Gordon type. But again, that's the question. How big of a situation is this? How badly do they want to fix, like officially fix this problem? They're making phone calls. And the thing is, we can already determine a range. We can eliminate free agents because you don't need to make trade calls. You can eliminate the idea. Well, I shouldn't say you should eliminate it. The next level would be wait for guys to get cut. Now, you can wait for guys to get cut and see what happens. But by making a trade, perhaps, you kind of just jump out in front of it. It's sort of like a seventh-round draft pick, right? Basically, he's an undrafted free agent, but we want to get him because I don't want to risk losing him to one of the other 31 teams. And if he hits the open market, we just may not get him. So let's see if we can just throw this guy a bone, get him off the team now. So in other words, it could be a lower-level type player. I don't know. But there's also a much higher range. So anyways, I mean, this is all kind of brand new, but just kind of off the cuff, some people that are potential cut trade candidates, whatever. LeSean McCoy for the Buffalo Bills is an option. Not going to be nearly as expensive as a Melvin Gordon, as an Ezekiel Elliott, right? These guys are looking for, and apparently Ezekiel got a massive offer. I tell you one thing that would be awesome about Ezekiel Elliott, as much as I don't really like him, he doesn't seem to be a great person. And I don't know if the Packers would even want that kind of a thing anyways. But the one thing that would be awesome about Ezekiel Elliott is how much the Dallas Cowboys fans would absolutely hate that. there's no question we don't get along with the Cowboys, and they don't like us very much. And taking their prize running back, the guy that they love so much, would just that would just be so awesome. But I don't want him. He's going to be too expensive. If we get him, say, you know, we're going through this whole thing again, right? The Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown situation all over again. You know, if we get him, I'm going to freak out and say this is the greatest thing that's ever happened. But just know now, before I lose my mind, that officially this is not a good decision, and I don't want him. I'm going to be in a sort of psychosis if that happens, where I'm just super excited and I don't care about being rational. Anyways, again, LeSean McCoy would be an option. He's clearly nowhere near what he was, but talented guy nonetheless. I don't want to go through this whole list, man, because I just, if we're going to do it, let's do something exciting. I don't want to talk about CJ Procise, because it just makes me sad, man. Kind of going off the cuff, but that's not really unusual for me. Pretty much at least 70% of my podcasts are off the cuff anyways. But let's try to look at this here. The highest graded runner last year was Melvin Gordon, according to Pro Football Focus. Not overall graded player, but as a strictly a runner was Melvin Gordon. After that was Derrick Henry, just looking at guys. Aaron Jones was fourth. Trying to find people that are actually available. I don't know, but I can tell you straight up, if we did end up trading for Melvin Gordon, don't want to, don't think we're going to. I'll say that caveat every time, just because people are going to flip out, because nobody remembers things. Getting the guy that is literally the number one running back in the NFL last year, according to PFF, not really going to upset me all that much. I know there's some issues there, but, you know, the Bears get Khalil Mack and meh. The Vikings get this oh-so-great quarterback, Trey Flowers. You know what? How about this? We're going to pair Melvin Gordon, Devontae Adams, and Aaron Rodgers. You know what? How about that? How about that? How about you brag about Khalil Mack now, Mr. I still don't have a first-round pick even in 2020 because we gave away every first-round pick in our for the remaining years of our franchise. How about the best trio in all of football? And it's not even close. And the Saints can go pound sand. How about that? But anyways, you know, even if a trade does go down, it's probably still going to be, we're going to give you, I don't know, a conditional seventh, and you're going to give me somebody that you don't really want. We're probably going to cut, but we'll just take him off your hands now so you don't have to worry about it, and you get a little bit of compensation as opposed to just cutting the guy. That or nothing's going to happen, which, to be honest, it's probably the most likely is that there isn't going to be some kind of a trade. Very, very unlikely it's some kind of a blockbuster trade. But, again, lots of trade talks. Things are really heating up. Teams are working the phones a lot. Hopefully we get some kind of information and something going on. I get it. Obviously, I'm comfortable with Aaron Jones. I'm not in any way advocating getting rid of Aaron Jones. I understand the idea of we don't need somebody that's really talented because we have Aaron Jones, or, as some people love to point out, running the ball isn't even important. It's the fact that you run the ball, not how well you run the ball. Okay. Well, I'll take 10 yards. You can take 2 yards. That's difference of opinion. I'll take Aaron Jones. You can take Trey Carson. Actually, you don't even need Trey Carson. You can just run the ball because, again, doesn't matter if you get any yards, which you won't. It's just that somebody hands you the ball and that you run. It's literally all that matters, man. Statistics. Learn to read a graph, son. But anyways, how should we do this? Because that took a long time. Let's just take our break, and then we'll fly through PFF and call it a day.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
So, starting off with the overall offensive grades, one elite player, take a wild guess who that was. Well, you're wrong. It was Tim Boyle. No, like I said, Tim had a good day, man. Started off shaky. mostly the deep passes, which I'm sure, you know, they're, with their grading and whatnot, those are harder throws, whatever. But a passing grade of 88.5, an overall grade of 90.3. He just cracked that elite mark. Tim Boyle's stepping up, man. As much as I want to say DeShone Kizer's probably going to be it, not because of necessarily talent, but because that's just how it works in the NFL, especially under Mike McCarthy and Ted Thompson. I'm already forgetting their names. That's pretty bad. That was just the way it is, man. You get drafted earlier, you're the bigger dog. You know, we put faith in you. But it's a new era, and Tim Boyle definitely seems to be winning the job. I mean, it is what it is. It doesn't mean it has to be that way. They may just stick with Kizer because of maybe some upside that they perceive. It also kind of goes back to, I think, ego. It depends on how egotistical the coaches are, and especially with quarterbacks, and especially with Mike McCarthy and his whole quarterback cam thing. I'm sure he hung on to quarterbacks a lot, way longer than he should have, because, you know, he's going to be the one to turn this ship around. Anyways, Tim Boyle was fantastic. Otherwise, it was basically a five-way tie for second place. It was obviously not exactly a tie, but very, very close. Trevor Davis, Darius Shepard, Lucas Patrick, Gerhard DeBeer, and Alex Light all had really, really good days. Right at about the 80 mark, which is just cracking the very good. Technically, Trevor Davis was the only one that was there, but it was 80 and a bunch of 79s. And then it just plummeted from there. And again, I'm not going to touch on the mediocres, but just for fun, the one guy that was in the good category above the above averages was DeShone Kizer. Kudos to him for, being pretty above average. The guys who were terrible, Anthony Coyle at right guard, Equanimeous St. Brown, and Coyle was the only one that was terrible. The guys that were bad, Equanimeous St. Brown and Dexter Williams, and then everybody else was, you know, mid to high 50s and 60s, so that was pretty much it. Strictly in the passing game, you basically had Tim Boyle, Trevor Davis, and Darius Shepard. And then on the negative end, you had Equanimeous St. Brown and Evan Bayless, the tight end, that were bad. And then below average, Robert Tonyan, Jamon Moore, and Teo Redding. Looking at blocking specifically, once again, the Packers did pretty decent. Gerhard DeBeer and Justin McCray were the two that had very good pass blocking grades. Adam Pankey was actually right there with them, so props to him. I don't think I've said his name yet. Darren Hall, who just got cut, was right behind them. Guys that were terrible in pass blocking, which is the quickest way to get cut. Anthony Coyle, Trey Carson, those guys were terrible. The two guys that were bad, Cole Madison and Keith Ford. And then below average was Evan Bayless, the tight end. Run blocking, number one run blocker, Mr. Alan Lazard, doing everything he can to make the team. The other guy that was right at his heels, Alex Light. Those two guys were in the very good category. We'll call it high good, just to add two more guys. Lucas Patrick and Gerhard DeBeer were very, very solid in run blocking as well. The guys who were really bad at it, Anthony Coyle, who was apparently terrible at everything on this day, and Adam Pankey, who was solid in pass blocking, but pretty horrific in run blocking. Some specifics, which I actually haven't done before, as far as pressures, Anthony Coyle was the only one to give up two pressures. Both of them were just hurries. However, the two sacks that were given up were credited to number one running back Keith Ford. Number two was right tackle Adam Pankey. Overall in the day, we gave up two sacks, one hit, and six hurries. And since we're on the subject, I may as well bring it up because some of these, this does factor into grades. And I think sometimes when people get good grade or bad grades that people feel they shouldn't have, penalties do factor into this. Cole Madison had two penalties. Anthony Coyle had two penalties. Darius Shepard, Lucas Patrick, and Alan Lazard each had one penalty. As far as rushing grades, you know, just bad across the board. Specifically looking at running, the best running back was the only one that was average, and that's Trey Carson. Everybody else was below average or worse. Darren Hall was below average. Trevor Davis even got a below average grade somehow. I don't know how to quantify that necessarily. Dexter Williams and Keith Ford both had just flat-out bad grades. But even with Trevor Davis's 18-yard-per-carry rush, the team averaged 3.4 yards per carry. So that's pretty pathetic. Wide receivers, looking specifically at receiving grades, Trevor Davis and Darius Shepard were the two that had good receiving grades. The two guys that were bad, Equanimeous and Evan Bayless, everybody else averaged to barely below average. As far as the stats, Trevor Davis, 78 yards. The next highest was Darius Shepard with 40. Trevor Davis had five receptions on the night, which, you know, next highest was two. So obviously he had a very, very good night. Touchdowns to Trevor Davis and Jake Kumerow. Looking at yards per reception, Trevor Davis was the most on that at 15.6. Yards after the catch, Trevor Davis with 25. Yards after the catch per reception, however, goes to Trey Carson with 14 yards after the catch on average. Longest reception was Darius Shepard's 22-yard pass. First downs goes to Trevor Davis. He had 5 first downs. Drops, there were only 2, Equanimeous and Trevor Davis, which, you know, imagine what Trevor would have been without that drop. One interception was credited to Darius Shepard. Passer rating when targeted, Trevor Davis, 158.3. Incredible. The other guys with decent passer ratings when targeted, Jay Kumerow, 125, Trey Carson, 112, Keith Ford, dead at 100. Penalties, I mentioned Darius Shepard and Alan Lazard already. And so that's about it on the offensive side of the ball. Defensive side of the ball, there were 3 guys in the very good category. Top dog, again, it's another defensive lineman. Super excited to see it. Yes, even in the preseason, Mr. Montravius Adams. There were several highlights showing him with incredible get-off. And that's always been his thing, which is kind of exciting, too, because, you know, Montravius was that guy. He's that guy that has those highlights that really gets off the ball, but it doesn't really materialize. It's starting to materialize a little bit. Overall, you know, he had a decent run defense grade, tackling grade, pass rush grade, pretty much everything but coverage, but he only was dropped in coverage once. And even that was average, which probably just means nothing really happened. But, yeah, top dog on the day. Number 2 highest graded player on the entire team. The second highest graded guy rated his heels at an 86.5 is linebacker Brady Shelton. So he's definitely going to need to step up. And then third was actually Trey Matthews, somebody that has not really been talked about. He did have 54 total snaps, which is a lot. It's not a small sample size kind of thing. He played 37 snaps in coverage, had a very good, or not literally very good, but a great grade there. Incredible tackling grade, best tackling grade of the entire team. And then also a decent enough run defense grade. So hopefully enough to give some pause. And the fact that they gave him 54 snaps, it's not to be underestimated, man. They wanted to see a lot from him. They wanted to see, you know, I mean, you give that guy that many opportunities, there's a very real reason you're doing that. And that's because you actually really think, you know, it's probably a make or break thing. I want to see if this guy can handle it. And again, he played phenomenal. So if you don't have Trey Matthews on your 53, and I'm not saying you have to put him on, but maybe just give it a look and just think that over for a second. I mean, granted, it's got to be really impossible to put him on there, but, you know, let's assume Josh Jones is gone. Do you think maybe there's a spot? Maybe? I don't know. It's your 53. I'm not trying to coax you. I'm just giving you something to think about. And then I'll mention number 4 because he wasn't that far behind. Also, I just think he deserves credit because he's been incredible, and that's Mr. Raven Green. His tackling grade was not fantastic. It was below average, but everything else was on point, especially coverage. And again, I just think he's doing a really good job. Guys that did not do well, Olive Sagapolu, that's at least his second day or second time in a row. Nidair Rousey, or Rouse, Nairo, as I'm supposed to be calling him now. Terrible again. So those two have been next to each. And Natrell Jamerson. I'm pretty sure these are like the same guys over and over again. However, it is worth noting, Curtis Bolton was the 4th worst of the group. Now, he's hurt. I understand that he's hurt, but the reason I say that it's important, and he had 19 snaps, it's not, you know, completely small sample size, but, you know, there's this notion that Curtis Bolton is actually a very, very good linebacker, and we need him on the team and all this stuff. He had 1 good game and 2 bad games, is essentially what his preseason career has been. And I know, again, in preseason week 2, he flashed a lot, but he also made a lot of mistakes. He had a bunch of missed tackles. And even in this game, he had 2 tackles and 1 missed tackle. So before, he had 4 tackles and 4 missed tackles, which is a 1-to-1, and he was almost 1-to-1 again. So essentially, in the last 2 games, he had 6 tackles and 5 missed tackles. It's just, it's not great. He had basically how he graded out was a below-average coverage grade, a below-average run defense grade, and an abysmal tackling grade once again. So, I mean, I'm not trying to kick the guy while he's down. Obviously, he's injured. But just keep that in the back of your mind where it's not a matter of if we need a linebacker. It's only because Curtis Bolton's hurt. I think we just need one, regardless. Looking specifically at run defense, nobody really stood out. The best grade was a 74, but that was Mr. Kingsley Keke, who continues to show up. Overall, he did not have a very good grade. His pass rush grade was pretty low, but a decent enough tackling grade and a good run defense grade. You know, just keep showing signs, man. He's obviously a work in progress. It's going to take some time, and we've got the depth to be able to develop him behind some people and have a great coach, obviously, on top of all that. So there's time. But Kingsley was number 1, Montravius number 2, Trey number 3, Raven Green number 4. The guys that were really bad in run defense, Olive Sagapolu, James Crawford, which So after that, it's James Crawford, Ty Summers, and Curtis Bolton. Three linebackers, basically, at the very bottom. That's not good. You know, when you have a shortage of linebackers, to see three of your four worst tackler, or excuse me, three of the four guys that are the worst in run defense are your linebackers, it's not super fantastic. Tackling grade, Trey Matthews, number one. Ty Summers, number two. Both of them had very good grades, which is great for Ty Summers. Again, you got to be better in run defense. His pass rush wasn't great, but who cares? But solid tackling, and he had a good coverage grade. There's something to work with there, especially since actually out of 75 snaps, 38 were in coverage. The second most he was in was 25 snaps in pass rush. So he spent most of his time in coverage, and he did pretty well in that. So that's actually pretty encouraging news. The tackling issues are obviously far better, but still there are some issues. Natrell Jamerson, James Crawford, Chandon Sullivan, Curtis Bolton, all in the 20s. Horrific. Guys that were bad, which is a pretty big jump up from 28, but Deion Simon and Will Redmond in the 40s, and then Raven Green was actually 53, which is below average. Not great. But again, I still think he's doing a pretty good job. He probably just had like a missed tackle or something. I don't really know. What is it? What is the deal with Raven Green here? Let's take a look. He didn't have a missed tackle, so I don't know. He did something wrong. Bad angle. I don't know how they grade. Pass rush. This one gets me a little bit excited. Montrevious Adams was number one. Number two, Rashawn Gary. That's right, Mr. He's trash. He doesn't know how to do anything. He hasn't shown up on the stat sheet. Rashawn Gary, that guy, number two. Now, his coverage grade was horrific, which is why his grade overall was 55.9, which is below average. His run defense grade was right at about average. His coverage grade was a 38, so really, really bad. But again, his pass rush grade, which is all anybody cares about, was the second highest on the team right behind Montrevious Adams. Not great, didn't show up on the stat sheet, but obviously what they were looking at, they saw some quality there somewhere. I don't know. It's a good sign. Next on that list would be Brady Shelton was third. Guys that were not good, nobody really stands out. It was so out of 17, only six were average or better. Six out of 17. So everybody else was below average. Trey Matthews, James Looney, Ty Summers, Kingsley Keke, Kyler Fackrell, James Crawford, Tyler Lancaster, Randy Ramsey, Olive, Marcus Jones, and Deion Simon all were below average. And then coverage, the number one coverage guy, and he had 16 snaps in coverage, so again, not a super small sample size. It's relevant, is Mr. Brady Shelton. Good on him. Number two was Ty Summers, so as much as I said it's not good that these guys aren't good in run defense, our top two cover guys were linebackers, followed by Raven Green and Trey Matthews, both strong safeties. And then the other guy that was in the good category was Tony Brown. Good on him. The guys that were really terrible in coverage, Nyro, Rashawn Gary, Natrell Jamerson, and then two guys that are below average, Curtis Bolton and Will Redmond. As far as pressures, only one guy had two pressures. That was Montrevious Adams. Otherwise, one, two, three, a bunch of guys had one, whatever. The one sack on the day goes to Brady Shelton. The one hit on the day goes to James Looney. Everybody else had a bunch of hurries. Tackles, Ty Summers once again was the guy with nine tackles. The next highest was a bunch of people with three tackles. Missed tackles, Natrell Jamerson, James Crawford, and Chandon Sullivan all had two missed tackles. Curtis Bolton, Will Redmond, and Deion Simon had one missed tackle. Stops, and this is actually really, really cool. Forget the tackles for a moment. Again, stops are basically relevant tackles, or tackles. The way that they define it is a play that is a negative play for the offense. So again, it's less than 4 yards, I think, on first down. It's stopping a third down play. It's stopping a first down on fourth down. It's relevant plays to that matter. It's not just tackling a guy from behind after he gets a 20-yard gain. That's not good enough. Of the nine tackles, Ty Summers had seven stops. That's really, really impressive. So the next highest tackle amount was three. Ty Summers had seven stops. So that's pretty cool to see. And Raven Green was 3 for 3. So there you go. It's about as good as you can get when you only make three tackles. They were significant tackles. There were zero interceptions, which is pretty upsetting. I was really kind of hopeful on that. I mean, there weren't, you know, we didn't have our starters or anything like that playing, but still. Chandon Sullivan actually did have three pass breakups, so good on him. He didn't have the worst day ever. Terrible tackling grade, but still overall with a 71 overall grade. But three pass breakups is solid. The other guys with pass breakups, Josh Jackson had one, Raven Green had one, and Will Redmond had one. And then NFL passer rating when targeted. I guess these would be negative, the guys going from worst to best. James Crawford and Will Redmond, 118.8. Shannon Sullivan, 107, and then Natrell Jamerson and Tony Brown, 100 passer rating when targeted. And then penalties, we've got what looks like about five penalties. Brady Shelton, Shannon Sullivan, Kingsley Keke, Ty Summers, and Raven Green, each with one penalty. So that's the defense. Looking at special teams grades, nobody super stands out as far as elite or very good, but two guys were in the good category. Trey Matthews, who just apparently had a phenomenal outing. I mean, that's, you know, to do all that on so he got a significant amount of snaps. He was really, really good, but not just in one facet, right? He was solid in against the runs, good tackler, also in coverage, but he was also the number one guy on special teams. That is significant. And he had a ton of snaps. Only one other guy that I can see, three guys had more snaps than Trey Matthews on special teams. But anyways, the other guy was Malcolm Johnson. People that stood out as being really terrible, Kyler Fackrell, Raven Green, Hunter Bradley, once again, I hate seeing that, and then Jay Kumerow. I guess we could throw in Tommy Bohannon and Jamon Moore also were pretty bad. Kicking grades, again, not a whole lot going on. There were no field goals, so basically the grades that you get when you do that is average, but Mason Crosby 2-for-2, Sam Ficken 1-for-1. And then punting, they gave J.K. Scott a 62.8, you know, whatever. Again, 66 yards was his longest, which is just an absolute freak show. That's really the only one that I care about. Yards per attempt, again, doesn't matter because that's going to be skewed by the times that you're not kicking it very hard, but 45.7. The one thing that is kind of surprising is how low his hang time was. He had an average hang time of 4.44, especially when your average yards per attempt is a little bit lower. Granted, that 66-yarder was probably just on a rope, but still, usually that's over 5, so that dropped pretty significantly, but, you know, whatever. I thought he still had a pretty solid outing, and again, I'm more than content. It would be nice to get a little bit more hang time because that's pretty significant, right? Especially, you know, you look at how great that punt was at the 2-yard line, but he had a significant return. Now, that's not J.K. Scott's fault. However, you get a little bit more air under it, he's not going to return it. He's going to fair catch that or just let it go out of bounds or whatever the situation may be. So maybe that would be part of the reason why he could have done better. But either way, again, I'm very impressed with what he's done. So that's going to be it for PFF and I guess for what this is. We'll see if there's any significant news. Otherwise, tomorrow I think we're going to get into the Facebook group and some questions because those are really stacking up. I appreciate everybody's patience and, you know, don't feel like because I haven't gotten to it that you need to stop. Just keep sending them in because what happens is I start doing this stuff and then I have to do several days of questions and I burn through them all in one day and now I have nothing left. So keep putting that in there. Either questions, comments in the Facebook group, or just post a comment that is not even directed at me. I will take it anyways. Or you can send me a question or a text message or a voicemail, whatever, to the phone number that I have listed in the description of the show. If you are new to the show, by the way, I just assume everybody's been listening forever, but I forget, especially now that the stats are going up, there's a lot of new people. So welcome. I hope you're appreciating it. Any feedback that you have for me, this is episode like 515, but I still would like to learn and grow how to continue doing this better. So any feedback is appreciated. Otherwise, you folks, enjoy your Saturday. Go watch the Bears get beat up on and go make fun of them. That'll make all of our days feel much better. And I will talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one. Bye-bye.